Welcome to the Miko Pellet Hour. This is Miko Pellet. I'm your host. And today my guest is Manel Tamimi. Manel has been a friend for many, many years. She's a courageous activist from the village of Nabi Saleh in the West Bank in Palestine. And thank you, Manel, for your time and for agreeing to speak to me today. Before we start, I want to mention something you said. I came to Nabi Saleh a few years ago and interviewed you with a friend at your home. And you said something which I will never forget. You said that you are a woman, a mother, a Palestinian, and an activist. And you said this is these are the most difficult things to have all in one person. And you are that person. And of course, you do it very well. So can you talk a little bit about what it means to have all of these different pieces inside of you as a person?
Yeah, it's true. It's the hardest thing for a woman to be all these things in one person, but it's not by choice. In Palestine, we are living under occupation, so activism, it's a must. Taking care of the family is a must. I choose to be activist because I refuse to keep silent against all the crimes committed against my people. I'm a mother of four. I'm a worker. I'm working. It's not easy. Because it's not just the motherhood, practicing motherhood as a normal mother. Here, during day and night, all the time, I'm worried about whether they're going to arrest my children or not. If they went to schools, whether they will be back or not. If they goes to Ramallah, goes to a friend, whether they will be back or not. During night, if I hear any sound, maybe the army, they came to arrest somebody, they gonna shoot at the house, maybe settlers, they attacked the village. So all these fears and worries, sometimes it's like handcuffed you, because fear, it's normal to be afraid, but in the same time, it shouldn't handcuff you. You have to practice your life as it's normal, which is not normal, but at least we have to live. We have to live. We're not staying we can't. I'm afraid, so I'm making my house like a prison. No, it's not like that. We live normal life as much as we can, but in the same time, we are doing things for our cause, for our country, and for our people.
And you know, just for the audience, I've been to your home. I've met many times. I've met your children, of course, Bilal, your husband, who's been recording everything that happens in Nabi Saleh for many years, and made it available for the world. And you do manage to live a normal life. I mean, your kids are wonderful, and your house is open, and there's a lot of happiness and joy, as well as fighting. And again, in that interview that I did with you, you described something very difficult, and I was reminded of it now with on the Israeli side, the Zionist side, they are all talking about the hostages that were taken into Gaza, the Israeli hostages, and the poor families and the mothers who missed their children, and on and on. And you said something, you told us a story about when your two boys were in prison and you didn't know what was happening to them. And at night you would go sleep in their beds. And then one of them was taken to the hospital. Can you talk about that experience? Because nobody talks about the fact that Palestinians have been suffering this reality where their children are being kidnapped and put in prison and tortured for decades and decades and decades. You know, they talk about, oh, the poor Israelis now. And of course, it's sad, of course, that's not the point. But Palestinians, this is their life. And as a Palestinian mother, this was your life. Do you mind repeating that story?
You've been in the village and during the protest we used to do. So we know that at one point we gonna suffer. So for me, the choice of resistance and activism, as I said, it was a must because I refused that just to keep silent against everything committed toward my people. During the protest, we used to do silent goodbye for each other because we knew that losing somebody is just a matter of time. Either death or being arrested or whatever. So I thought that emotionally I'm prepared for the point that they're gonna arrest my sons, they're gonna arrest me, they're gonna arrest my husband. Even for the idea of death, that maybe it's just a matter of time that I'm gonna lose somebody. And you know that we lost seven people, seven of our cousins since 2009 until now. So I was in it's arrested three times, and it was for me it was okay because it's my choice. I choose to resist, so I'm taking the responsibility for this choice. But when it's related to my children, every step I have to think like 1 million times. Does it worth to put my children in this position? Does it worth to put my children in such circumstances? It was like, okay, rethinking whether I have to do it or not. But by the end, it's incubation. It doesn't matter whether you do something or not. You are targeting for your nationality. Just being Palestinian, took the decision to stay in Palestine, you are enemy. So all the time I was thinking and preparing myself that, okay, if they come to arrest my children, okay, that's okay. All the time they are arresting people. So when they came to arrest Muhammad, he was 19 at that point, they came 3 in the morning. Of course, we had at 2 in the morning, we had a call from one of our neighbors that your house is surrounding, so they for sure they're gonna enter. So we were prepared that they're gonna come to arrest somebody, or at least it's kind of show of power that they will enter the house, they're gonna maybe break furniture, they're gonna attack us, whatever. So it's gonna be a difficult night. So they came inside, they put us in one room, and then they asked for our IDs. And when they took Muhammad ID, they took him to isolated him in one of the bedrooms, and they were interrogating him. So then there were intelligence officer with them. He said that, okay, we're gonna take him for like half an hour and he will be back. I told him, we know this, that if you take him, he will never be back for a long time. So at least give us time to say goodbye for him. It was winter, it was January, the 11th of January. So I brought a coat for him, I gave him a coat and to warm himself. Then we thought normally when they arrest somebody from Nabi Saleh or for if his charges for stone throwing, they're gonna take him to Binyamin police station. They're gonna interrogate him till morning. Then he will be transferred to Ofer prison in near Ramallah, and that's it. So we were okay in the morning. We were calling. I called many, called lawyers. I called the Yeshdin. I called. So nobody knows anything about him. His lawyer was Gabi Leski, and she was also trying to find him, and we couldn't find him.
And I'm sorry, Yesh
That
Din
was.
is, I'm sorry, Manuel, just to interrupt just a second. Yesh Din is an NGO that provides.
Israeli NGOs, yeah, that she helped in founding the prisoner in the 24 hours. So they can at least the family they will know where there are sons at that point. So we couldn't find him, and that was a sign, okay, there is something wrong happening here. Then we knew that he's in Petah Tikva interrogation center, which is one of the worst interrogation centers. It's based underground, two floors underground. Gabby, she could his lawyer, she
This is
couldn't
again
predict him.
I don't want to interrupt, but just to, so the listeners understand, this is an interrogation center. Not this is the intelligence services. This is the Mukhabarat,
Yeah,
the intelligence services, where they
it's the
take
Shabak,
people,
it's not the police,
and
which is worse.
it's more like a
Yeah,
torture, more like a torture place than interrogation place or questioning place. Just to make that clear.
exactly. Shabak interrogation, it's worse because they have the license to torture Palestinian, and also the center itself, it's well known for the worst interrogation methods they are using. We were so worried because Muhammad, he had a bullet in his leg at he was injured before, and he still have a bullet in his leg, and also he has a piece of bullets in his hand. So also his health, it's not a health condition, it's not
Just a second, hold on, Manal. Just a minute. We need to stop there for just a minute. So he's
okay.
19 years old. They come at 2 o'clock in the morning to arrest him, and they take him to Petah Tikva, to a torture chamber. But he already previously, from previous, I suppose, protests in Abi Saleh, he was shot in the leg and shot in the hand,
Yeah.
and he already has bullets and shrapnel in his body
Yeah.
from being shot by the Israelis previously.
Yeah.
And he's only 19. He's
Muhammad.
only 19.
Yeah, Muhammad, he the first time he was wounded, he was 12 years old. He was standing in front of the house, and a soldier shot him with a high velocity gas canister in the side, which caused a damage in the liver and kidney and internal bleeding. For 12 days, he was fighting for his life, and he was in the intensive care. It was a miracle that he survived.
When he was 12 years old, when he was 12 years old.
Yeah, he was 12 years old. When he was 16 years old, also he was shot with live ammunition in the leg, and it was so close to the artery. You know, the left leg, it has the main artery to the heart. That's why most of the injuries, it's in the left leg. They shoot the left leg because it's more dangerous than the right one. So this bullet, it was very close to the artery, and the doctors were afraid to remove it, which gonna make a bleeding, and maybe they won't be able to save his life. So they decide to keep it, and the body will build a flesh on the in the bullet, and it will stay there forever. But in winter, or if he like blaze boards or something, it hurts him. By the end, it's a bullet. It's in his leg.
How
So
old
we
was he?
were.
How old was he when he was shot in the leg?
He was 16.
So 3 years before the story you're telling us now about the arrest, he was already shot twice, very seriously.
Yeah. And he was shot the third time. It was assassination attempt, but it was after he was released, 2 weeks after he was released. So I'm gonna talk about this later. Now, so we were so afraid. Gabby, she couldn't visit him. Even when they want to renew his, you know that according to the Israeli law, for the first 4 days, they can keep him. Then they have to renew the interrogation period for 18 days, then they have to renew. So they have to keep renew it. And sometimes this court, it's a chance for the family and the lawyer to visit the prisoner. But because it's a Shabak interrogation, they renew this while he was in Beit HaTikva. They didn't send him out to Ofer or any other court. So Gabby, she couldn't visit him.
And Gabi, just again, Gabi is Gabi Lasky. She's an Israeli attorney
She's
who's
Israeli,
visit this.
yeah. She's Israeli lawyer. Now she's a Knesset member, and she used to take nonviolent resistance prisoner, the cases of nonviolent resistance prisoner. So we have no idea why he's being arrested, what is their charges, what is happening with him. So 1 week later, Osama, he was working, my oldest son, he was 23 at that time, and he was working in Ramallah, so he was coming back. And he used to be home around 6, 7, so it's like 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. We called him, but he's not answering. I called one of his friends. He said, okay, we went with him until he take that the taxi to Nabi Saleh. Then we left at and it, that was at 5. So okay, it was like 1 in the morning, and till now he's not here. And the worst, that night they find a Palestinian body. For a Palestinian who was shot in a nearby area. It's near Mudayin. So, but they didn't know who he is.
Oh my God.
So we were, and settlers, they were standing in front of Halmish, the settlement, next to the village, and they were throwing stones at Palestinians' cars, and they were attacking Palestinians. So it's like millions of ideas, whether he was the one who was killed, whether the settlers, they kidnapped him, whether he was like the car, it made accident because settlers were throwing stones. And, all the words or all the bad ideas, it come in 1 minute. And we couldn't sleep, of course, that night. And in the morning, I called Yishdin again, but they said that we don't know where he is, but we are keep searching. For after 2 days, we knew that he also has been arrested, and he was also taken to Beit HaTikva interrogation center. After like 1 week later, I got a call from Gabby, the lawyer. She said that I got a call from the Shabak, and they said that they transfer Osama to the hospital, but I have no other details. So, okay, he is in under interrogation in the worst interrogation center. He was taken to the hospital. Of course, it's not a normal checkup. We have no other details, no other news. We knew nothing. Then after like another 4 or 5 days, I got another call from
Wait a minute.
Gabby
So
saying,
he's in the hospital. He's in the hospital, and you can't visit him.
no, not
He.
even Gabby, she couldn't.
So he's in the hospital, being
Yeah,
treated for
because
what
he's
we can
still under
assume,
arrest.
probably because he was tortured. You don't know what happened, and neither you or his lawyer can't visit him. And it's been how many days already since they took him?
It was like 10 days.
So 10 days and you haven't seen him yet. You haven't heard from him and you can't visit him in the hospital. You know,
Yeah.
I'm emphasizing these things because people don't know that this is the daily life of a Palestinian mother.
Yeah.
This has nothing to do with October 7. This has nothing to do with any group or another
No,
group.
that
This
was
is the
in
life.
2017.
This is the life of a Palestinian mother in a small, beautiful village called Nabi Saleh, one of the most beautiful places in the world, I think, but certainly in Palestine. And this is just the daily life. On go, go. So I just
Yeah.
want to emphasize that this is normal for Palestinian
Yeah.
life. This living in terror like this is normal
Yeah.
for Palestinians. Please continue.
Yeah, so after like another 4 or 5 days, I got another call from Gabby saying that he's, for the second time, they took him to the hospital. Osama has been taken to the hospital. Again, with no details, with nothing. So I have no idea where are my sons. I have no idea what they are going through. I began to call ex-prisoners who were interrogated in Petah Tikva. I want to know about this prison. I don't want to read about it. I want real experiences. So people, and even Jonathan, you know Jonathan Bullock, he told me, Manel, I don't want you to be afraid. I was detained there for 5 days. If they kept me for another extra day, I will confess that my mother, she's like the leader of Hamas. And
Jonathan
Jonathan, he's a
Pollack, just
very
to clarify, Jonathan Pollack is an Israeli refuser
active.
and activist, yes.
Yeah, and he's very strong. He's
Very
not
strong,
this
very
kind of,
courageous.
yeah, very courageous. So another friend, he told me, you know, Manel, when I was in Petah Tikva, I have a crutch, you know, it's like sarsour.
Cockroach.
Yeah,
Cockroaches, yes.
and he was my friend. I was talking to him because I was isolated all the time, and after like 50 days, he died. So I began to cry. I spent the whole day crying because it died. So all this story put me in a emotional situation. Like emotionally, I was in a chaos, internal chaos. You know, I have nothing to do, or I don't know how to help my sons. I know nothing about them. I have no idea what they are going through. I spend all the day just keep walking without no idea where what I'm doing or where I'm going. I used to go to my work, and it was, as I said, it was January, and I was going out of my office, taking around for 1 hour while it's raining, and I even didn't feel cold. When I go back to my office, my colleague, you, they used, okay, you are like wetting, and they used to take my clothes, warm it on the heater, and I didn't feel any cold. I didn't feel that it's raining. I shouldn't walk in the rain, or I shouldn't. Many times I nearly had like an accident because I didn't see the cars coming, or I was like out of the space. And to be close to them, I used to every night to sleep in one bed. Like today, it's I'm missing Osama. I sleep in his bed. Today I miss Muhammad. I sleep in his bed. Even I used like to wash their clothes. It's clean. It's in their closet. But I took them. I washed them because I want to feel that they are here. They still living with us.
How long
It
before
was
they came back?
Osama. He spent 9 months, and Muhammad 2 years. But for the first
Good.
25 days, they were still in the under interrogation in Petah Tikva, and it was Ramadan. Then Ramadan came, so I used to put plates for them and put food in their plates. That they okay, they still here. Hamada, he loved this kind of food. Here is his food. Osama, he's kind of vegetarian. Here's his. I want to feel that they still living with us. I refuse the idea they're not here anymore. I don't know for how long, but I refuse this idea.
I think anybody who's listening that has children, their heart is exploding now from this story. And I know your children. They are sweet, intelligent, kind, handsome boys that, the best kind of children any parent would be so proud to have and to love. And people need to understand that this is being done to just the sweetest, nicest people, the sweetest, nicest children. You know what I mean? There's this, just to make it very, very clear, that's what we're talking about. This is a normal life of a Palestinian child, a Palestinian boy, for living, like you said, for existing in a place like Nabi Saleh.
Yeah, and it's a very silly charges. It's throwing stones, which they couldn't approve. They didn't find a real proof that they really are throwing stones.
Were
But
they
even
on trial? Was there a trial, or were they both
yeah,
administered?
so after 25 days of, they had a trial, and for the first time they brought them to Ofer, near Ramallah. Ofer is the only Israeli prison in Palestinian territories. All the Israeli prisons are inside the occupied 48, that as Palestinian holding the Palestinian ID, we're not allowed to go there. We need a special permit for this. So after 25 days, they brought them to Ofer, and we went there. Osama, he was good. Of course, both they lost a lot of weight. It's like at least it's between 15 and 20 kilos for each. That I couldn't recognize Muhammad when he entered, when he came,
That's
because
about
he,
30 to 40 pounds. These are young men.
yeah.
So to lose 30, 40 pounds when you're that young.
Yeah, of course, they were yellow. They were like clothes for somebody who's like 200 pound. So they were, you have to search for them in middle of these clothes. They didn't wear shoes. They have long hairs, long beards. You know, for 24 days, they couldn't have even a shower. They were not allowed to have a shower. My mother had
They're being
with
held captive. I just want to repeat this, and then we have to take a little break. But they, for more than 2 weeks, for almost a month actually, they're being held. They're being tortured. They're being questioned. They're not allowed to take a shower or shave or take care of themselves. No hygiene is permitted at all. And then suddenly, and then they put them on trial. We have to take a little break. You're listening. If you're just joining us, this is the Miko Pellet Hour. I am your host, Miko Pellet. I'm speaking to Manal Tamimi from the village of Nabi Saleh in Palestine. And stay tuned. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to the Miko Pellet Hour. I'm your host, Miko Pellet. I'm speaking to activist and mother and friend, Manal Tamimi. From the village of Nabi Saleh, about her experiences as a mother, as an activist, having children who are also activists. And I was just mentioning that now, as we speak, there's a huge campaign to release the Israeli hostages held in Gaza by Palestinian fighters in Gaza. For decades, Palestinians are being held hostage, really, kidnapped. In violation of all kinds of international laws, and we never hear the voice of a mother. We rarely hear a call to bring them home. And we're talking, these prisoners are our brothers and sisters, their mothers and fathers. They are children of their children, and so on. And so, Manal, your voice right now and your story is incredibly, incredibly moving and incredibly important. I want to change a little bit and talk about your work. You told me something about a conference you attended here in the US, but can you talk a little bit about your work and then why you attended this conference just before October the 7th here in the US?
I just want to say a small thing about Osama and Muhammad when they were when we went to see them in the court. That Muhammad, he has an anesthesia. He has a memory loss because of the how they tortured him, and he couldn't recognize my mother. She was like talking to him, how are you? How are you doing? And he was asking the lawyer, who is this woman who's talking to me? Of
He
course, it's forbidden even for.
didn't recognize his grandmother.
No, and it's of course inside the court you're not allowed to speak with the prisoners, but we were like, there's no choice that we're not gonna talk to them. So it was like only hi, how are you doing? That's it. So when we left the court, the judge of course consider us that we're not obeying the orders, and he told the soldier to take them out. So when they took us out of the court, and then the lawyer, she came and she said that Muhammad says that if you see my mother, tell her that I love her. So I was just next to him, and he couldn't recognize that I'm also there. That was like the point I was like crashed. Alhamdulillah, then we worked there with the I worked with psychologist, so she used to give me instruction how to deal with him. And when the prisoners called from the prison, I told them what they have to do with him. So we took him out of this. Till now, he spent 2 years in prison, but until now, he still have sleeping difficulties, still have nightmares. He still sometimes even he wake in the middle of the night screaming, saying that there is a snake coming or somebody watching from the window or whatever. So he still have some problems, but Alhamdulillah, he's way better than before. So regarding the conference, I was
Talk about your work a little bit. What is the you talked about your work. If you could talk about your work a little bit.
yeah, I'm working in International Relations Department as advocacy officer in Colonization and War Resistance Commission, which is it's belong to Palestinian Liberation Organization, and we can say it's not part of Palestinian Authority, but it's working with Palestinian Authority. So it's a governmental sector. I was in Atlanta in by the end of August, beginning of September, for a conference. It's for uni.
2023,
Uni.
2023, huh? 2023.
Yeah. 2023. It was a conference that they supposed to vote for Palestine. It's for uni. Uni. It's like part of UPU. And it's for the unions, all unions worldwide. So there were like more than 4,000 participants from all over the world, the different unions. And they supposed to vote for Palestine to have the full membership in the union. So the Israeli delegation, they made a huge campaign against this, and they had like a deal that the Middle East, the Mediterranean area, they have like nine chairs in this body. So Israel, they had a deal that they're gonna take seven positions. And one position for Jordan, and the other one for Lebanon. So, and Palestine is out. They don't want Palestine. So I had a big fight when I knew I talked with the American unions, I talked with the Canadian, the British. I was like targeting the big unions worldwide. And eventually we had Palestine, she had three positions, and Israel, they have four positions. When they bought for Palestine, two-thirds for Palestine for three positions, which was great because we were out there. For this, the Israeli delegation, they were so mad. And I had, there is another colleague with me, he's from Hebron, and they attacked us physically inside the conference itself during one of the panels. So one of the Israeli delegation, he was pointing like a weapon, we're putting a weapon in our heads, and he was, "Why you are here? Why you came here? You are terrorists, blah blah." You know, this anti-Semitic and all these propaganda and lies they are keep telling. So at that point, I was like, okay, we have to do something. I went to the one of the organizers, and I told her about what's happened. So they decided that, okay, they're gonna take us, both Israeli-Palestinian delegation, took us to a room, and they're gonna say that they are sorry, and that's it. Of course, which I refused. Because I told them that I'm not negotiating them, and I will not stay with them in the same room. And if they have to say anything, they have to say it to the representative of the uni, and they come to tell me. But I'm not talking with them. And so the head of the Israeli delegation, she said that, okay, we're gonna apologize. But apology, it's nothing in this case. It's not, he threatened us, he attacked us. So I asked for like a written apology, and I asked for the head of the unit to apologize, not apologize, to prevent this person from attending any conference or any activity for the uni, which they approved. And even the head of the uni himself, he apologized in front of the conference by in the last panel, he apologized that we are sorry that this happened during one of our conferences. And they decide that any conference, the Israeli delegation, they have to give the names before and the position of the people, and they will approve their participation or not. Which was great. For me, it was great because they have to know that Palestinian, even if they are alone, but it's that doesn't mean that we can do nothing or we will keep silent. Of
Right.
course, this has caused many problems, but at least I'm so happy that we had three positions out of seven, which is great. And I spent a good time in US. I came back because I have family there. I came back 3 days before October 7, which was like a shock. Since October 7 until now, everything happening here is unbelievable, in all levels, not just like in Gaza, West Bank, Jerusalem. It's all under attack. I can say all of these places are under attack, occupied, Palestinian in occupied 48. Prisoner situation,
No, go ahead, please continue.
inside prison it's a disaster because prisoners are not allowed to have family visits, nor lawyers, nor human rights organization, none. Nobody knows what's really going on inside the prison. I have a friend, you know him, Munder Amira. He was arrested last month. And the lawyer, a few days ago, she was able to visit him for the first time. He said that the worst that the prisoner from Gaza, who came from Gaza, they are subjected to three times a day torturing session. And he saw that once he was, they took him out to the cell, they keep changing the cells. And he said that the floor were full of blood. He could scream hear the screams and shouting of the prisoner from Gaza. The food quantity and quality is very bad. One of the prisoners who was released, he told me that every day they have like a piece of bread and one spoon of jam. They bring it in the morning, and till the next morning, they bring another spoon of jam and another piece of bread. If they are so lucky and they bring them food, like it's rare, it's not cooked. It's sometimes they found rats, or they found insects, or they in the food. The canteen, which the shop of the prison, it's closed. Since October 7 until now, seven people have been killed inside the prison. The last one is just, they announced his name just like half an hour ago. His name is Tariq Abu Sneni. He's from Jerusalem. He was arrested yesterday, and today they declare his death inside the prison. He's 16 years old. Outside the prison also, there are nearly 700 checkpoints and closed entrances for villages and cities in the West Bank. Nabi Saleh is, the two entrances of Nabi Saleh is closed. So if we have to go to Ramallah, it used to take like half an hour. Now it takes 2 hours and 3 hours to be able to reach Ramallah. That's if we are lucky, because all the time there are checkpoints and they for us to go back. They would get gates everywhere, even, you know, near Atara, there are gates. They bought two gates. After like 2 kilos, there are another two gates. So all the time you have to pass gates, and you have to take best roads, because we're not allowed to take the main streets. Also at these checkpoints, they keep searching the phones. So if they find a photo or a video, or even if you have a Telegram account, or if you have a TikTok account, they most of the time either they arrest the person or they attack him physically. I know somebody, he's 21 years old, and they took his phone, they searched him, and they couldn't find Telegram. So they told him, we searched your phone number and it shows that you have Telegram. So you deleted, this means that you deleted. And they kept him out. He spent 1 week in the hospital, and he was so lucky that he survived, because he just deleted the Telegram. So and many times they use this as an excuse. Monday he was arrested over a like. He put a like for somebody. Even he didn't post on his Facebook. He didn't put anything, but he just put a like for somebody else post. So now they sentenced him 4 months under administrative detention. And the lawyer says that they told her that they're going to renew this after the end of the
just to clarify, Munder Amira, many people know Munder Amira. He is an activist from Aida refugee camp near Bethlehem. Many people
Yeah.
know him. He's a brave and wonderful soul. Everybody loves him. He's a very brave man,
Yes.
but he's a very, very kind and generous man. I think you agree with me. Everybody loves him on that, and everybody that knows him, experienced him, knows
Yeah.
him. Yeah.
Yeah, we miss him so much. So also another thing since October 7 that the soldiers they are serving in West Bank, they're not in, I don't know how you say it in English. It's like on hold soldiers who are civilians having normal careers, but in the time of war they take
Reservist.
him to reserves. Yeah.
Yeah.
So most of them they are like this person who they took them from their comfort zone, and they have to serve in the army. They left their careers, their houses, their beautiful lives. So they want to revenge for this. Now, the minute they are in the village, immediately they only use live ammunition. They're not using tear gas. They're not using steel-coated rubber bullets. They're not using anything. It's only live ammunition. The other day we were having lunch in the kitchen, and suddenly we began to hear sound of live ammunition. Of course, we were like on the ground, all of us on the ground, and the soldier were in front of the house shooting for nothing. There were nobody in the street, and after they left, we were able to count 30 live bullets in the house, in the walls of the house. We were so lucky that these bullets weren't inside. We could be killed all or even got one dead. And this is just was sh kind of show of power. There's no need for this. There's no need. So since 3 months, we have like seven peoples have been killed from the area, from here. And of course, it just like this. They just enter the place, shooting live ammunition, killing the person, and they just leave.
Well, that's another part of this issue that people never talk about, and very few people talk about, nobody hears about. Here on the Mikko Pellet Hour, I've been interviewing over the last weeks. I've been interviewing activists from Naqab, from Jerusalem, from Hebron, and now yourself. These are voices of people that are really explaining and showing what is happening throughout all of Palestine every day. And then, especially after October 7, how things have become much worse for Palestinians everywhere. It's not just about Gaza, and Palestinians are being punished everywhere. Even the ones that are already in the prison are facing inhumane, completely inhumane conditions. And the things that you describe, Manal, are just horrifying. I want to bring you back to. Like I said, I know you, I know your family, I know your children. There's a normalcy in a life and a love in your house and in your family and in your children. And there's also this resistance. And in that same interview that we had a few years ago, you talked about teaching your children the need to resist and for what's theirs, but also to teach them about love and how
Yeah.
difficult that is to do both.
Yeah.
And can you talk, because you succeed. I mean, many people maybe try, but in your case, you succeed. I mean, I visited your house.
Luckily,
I came with my children to visit your house. Your kids came. There's a friendship and a love there that is obvious, but there's also this need to fight and resist and pay a very, very heavy price for that. How do you teach that? How do you balance that? How do you create this environment where one day it's like normal, and then the next day you're in this position?
It wasn't easy. It wasn't easy at all, because to teach them to love and to believe in justice, dignity, humanity, while you are expecting losing your life any minute, and after all this brutality, and after seeing all of my cousins who was killed since 2009 until now, our children, they saw them dying. They were there. They saw them like one of my cousins, his name is Aiz, and he was killed at my house backyard, and my children were standing on the balcony, and my daughter, she told him, "Aiz, soldiers are here, be careful." He said that, "Okay, I'm going home, I'm not doing anything." So she went inside to bring her phone, and she heard the sound of live ammunition. When she was out, eyes were on the ground bleeding. They shot him and kept him bleeding till he died. So she was 14, and Samer, he was 10. They went to help him, but the soldiers put the rifles on their head and told them that we're going to shoot them. Shoot you the same we did with him. You have to go back. So they were watching him until he died from their bedroom window. So all these experiences and many. I need like 10 hours if I want to talk about everything. But with this, it was very difficult to keep them believing that still life is still good. And we have to live it. I taught them to keep resisting because we don't want to lose our cause, and we have to keep fighting for a better life. But in the same time, death is not our goal. Prison is not our goal. We fight for life, for happiness, for love, for good things. So we have to keep to protect ourselves and to keep ourselves safe as much as we can. For this, in Nabi Saleh, they tried to arrest children in a way to incriminate adults, because it's easy to take a child, force him to sign papers written in Hebrew, which it's a language he doesn't understand, and by the end he's an eyewitness in a case for an activist, and he will spend time in jail, and this activist also spent time in jail. So for this, we did legal courses to teach children what is their legal rights in case of being arrested. We send them for summer camps outside in Spain, Italy, France, to teach them that, okay, you are fighting for freedom. This is what freedom means. You fight for love. This is how love looks like. You fight for dignity. That's how dignity or people live with dignity. This is life with dignity. So all these things, it gives the children that, okay, there is beautiful life. We have to fight for it. And I don't want to lose my life. So they still believe in it. Also with Israeli activists that we're not fighting a religion. It's not Judaism. We are fighting Zionism. It's a mentality and ideology. So any Israeli Jew who believe in us, he's welcome. So now they differentiate that. It's not the Judaism or Jew or Israeli who we are fighting. It's the uniform. This way we
this
were
is a
able
good place.
To...
We have to stop here, but this is actually a very good place to stop to talk about how you send them to see what dignity and love and life is, and that's what they're fighting for, so they know what it's all about. Manel Tamimi, thank you very, very much. If you've been listening, this is the Miko Pellet Hour. We've been listening to my conversation with Manel Tamimi from Nabi Saleh in Palestine. Soul Conversations is coming up next, so please stay tuned, and I will see you again next week. Thank you.